South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
Here. Quorum is present. I believe you've received a copy of the minutes from the last meeting. Comments or action? Moved by Senator Howey, approval. Seconded by Senator Peterson. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Just a couple reminders. First, welcome to the Senate Ag Committee. If you plan on testifying today, we'd ask that you sign up at the roster. Also, you might check your cell phones to make sure they're in the appropriate setting. Just wanted to make a few comments to the committee before we get started. Every committee is run slightly different, and I think the way that I typically run a committee is somewhat different than a typical Senate committee. The main difference is I prefer to hold all questions from proponent and opponent testimony until all the testimony has been offered. I think that makes for a more effective committee process and tends to, in some cases, I think the conversation get really derailed if you're asking the questions from the wrong person or those questions might be answered by somebody else testifying later. Aside from that, I tend to be somewhat on the formal side, especially if we're dealing with issues that are have the potential to become emotional or intense. So I would ask that all questions and comments be directed through the chair. And with that, do we have the name of the pages that are here today? We have the help of a couple very talented young ladies, I believe. Amy Miles from Pierre and Maggie Bow from Pierre. You are Maggie?
Yes.
Thanks, Maggie. Anything else before we get to today's calendar? Seeing none, I would tell you, too, that I was notified from the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks that they had a conflict today, so we will not be receiving a briefing from them. I think we probably have a pretty full day with the bills we have on our calendar regardless. So with that, we will take up Senate Bill 53, an act to modify the type of finance documents required for grain buyer's license and to declare an emergency. Senate Bill 53 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
Modify the type of financial documents required for a grain buyer license to declare an emergency. This bill has two sections in it. Section one adds language that would allow the commission to allow for the filing of financial documents other than a surety bond. It's revised very narrowly to allow that only in cases where the company is in the under chapter reorganization bankruptcy. It also removes the requirement that you've gone through a rule process. Section 2 of the bill declares an emergency, so the commission will be able to act on this if it should come up. The reason that we're bringing this bill is what's gone on in Marion with the Verisun bankruptcy. The Marion plant, when Verisun was originally licensed, they licensed the Aurora plant, and to the misunderstanding the way
Mr. Chair, could you please ask him to stay a little closer to the mic? It's a little difficult to hear over here.
Thanks, Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, turning it on has worked a lot. I'm going to start over. Do I need to start from the top or? Okay.
I believe you can continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the reason that we brought this bill, as I said, it stems from the Verisun bankruptcy filing. When they licensed under the current rules, that they misunderstood the way that the laws were written. So they only licensed their Aurora plant. In Marion, they had a procurement agreement in place with another licensed grain buyer. which the rules state that you can buy grain from producers up to $300,000 without a license. If you exceed that, then you need to be licensed as a grain buyer. Inside that procurement agreement was an agency agreement, which apparently the Verisun people who were charged with doing the licensing were not aware of, and that we were not aware of either. So in essence, the grain buyer that was acting for them was acting as their agent rather than acting as a buyer from the producer and then selling to the processor, which was Verisun. The problem that stemmed from that is that right now that Marion plant is shut down. If they would like to bring it online, the fundamentals for ethanol productions are not good right now, so they're leaving that plant in hot idle. But there are some contracts out there that are above market that producers are holding, you know, from November, December, January, and forward. Should they want to open that plant and perform on those contracts, they would not be able to unless they were able to procure a bond. Chapter 11, a bankruptcy may make it difficult for them to do it, at least in a timely fashion, and maybe not at all. And we just don't want this statute standing as a roadblock in a way of those producers being able to get their contracts worked on. So the PUC doesn't have any intentions of issuing license without doing our due diligence, but we would just like to have that roadblock removed in the event that they do apply for a license and everything else looks good.
Okay.
And the emergency clause is, you know, if it happens soon, you know, we would be able to act on them right away. Otherwise, they would have to wait till July 1. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mello. Further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Ag Committee. My name is Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls and a registered lobbyist for South Dakota corn growers. And we're here fully in support of Senate Bill 53 for the reasons already stated by the Public Utilities Commission. The grain buyer's license is important for the protection of the producers, and this bill would grant the PUC the flexibility to deal with the facts that we've seen as they've evolved here in the last year. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Opponents to Senate Bill 53. Seeing none, we will go to questions from the committee. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I have a question for my own education. Would you explain to me how much bond a grain buyer has to carry? I'm sure it's probably on the volume of bushels that they handle.
Mr. Chair, that is correct, Senator. Under current statute, a grain buyer is required to carry a bond that's proportionate to the amount of grain that he buys. Current statute has that capped at $300,000. So an ethanol plant such as Marion or Aurora would probably exceed the cap.
Senator Peterson. Granted.
Senator Peterson. I have one follow-up, Frank. that $300,000, when was that last updated?
Mr. Chairman, that was last session.
Last session.
Good.
What was the amount before that?
Mr. Chairman, prior to that, it was the bonding requirements were based on location. So if an entity that was licensing had five locations, they would have to have a $50,000 bond in place for each location. So an ethanol plant, even though their volume would probably exceed a lot of medium-sized elevators, even some that are multi-location, they would have been required to to have a $50,000 bond. And to expand on that, that's if they would have been required to be licensed prior to last year. Last year's session, we brought ethanol under the grain buyer regulations. Prior to that, processors were excluded.
One last question, if I may.
Peterson.
Do you know the approximate cost of a $300,000 bond?
Mr. Chairman, the rule of thumb is that it's 1%, so a $300,000 bond would cost roughly $3,000.
Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Milhoff, how does this affect the grain buyer that was buying for them? This will address the Freemar. Will this have any effect on Freemar themselves as they were buying the corn? And did they plant? And then I have a follow-up question.
Mr. Chairman, these changes, though they won't directly affect Freemar, they may. The agreement that they had in place was not exclusive. So some of the contracts that are out there arguably could possibly be attributed as Freemar contracts rather than Verisun contracts. Many of them would be Verisun. It's my understanding that Verisun wants to take responsibility for all of them, so that if they were to be allowed, it's my understanding that they would more than likely try to honor all those contracts. So that could benefit Freemar and could avoid some litigation. And I'm not aware of any that's percolating out there, but it certainly is a possibility.
You answered my second question with that last statement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Question from the committee. Thanks, Jim. Seeing none, we will move to discussion and or action. Senate Bill 53. Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to pass.
Motion by Hansen to pass. Is there a second? Second by Senator Klocek. Comments on that motion, Senator Hansen?
Just seems to make good sense in the changing environment that we've gone through to recognize that what seems to have completely covered the issue at one point, for example, 12 months ago, we discover now falls a little short.
Any other comments? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm going to support the motion today because the corn growers wants it. I'm a little concerned about, and I imagine that the farmers that are going to deliver, if the plant opens, will realize that there's no bond in place. I'm a little concerned about that, but I will support it today.
Any other comments? Discussion on the due pass motion. Seeing none, the motion then is due pass, Senate Bill 53. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bradford.
Aye.
Garnas.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Klocek.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Howie.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, a total of 9 votes on Senate Bill 53.
Senate Bill 53 passes, receives a due pass recommendation. Senator Hansen, would you carry this bill to the floor?
I would be happy to do that.
Senator Peterson, would you present it to your caucus? That will take us now to Senate Bill 54, an act to revise how certain rates are determined for grain warehouse operators. Senate Bill 54 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Jim Melhoff from the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission Warehouse Division. Senate Bill 54 is an act to revise how certain rates are determined for grain warehouse operators. As many of you are aware, last year we had a warehouse review committee that had industry professionals on it. The then executive director of the South Dakota Grain and Feed, members from the processing community, we took a look at all of our statutes that were on the books. One of the recommendations of that committee was that we have a rate hearing to increase the storage rates that are allowed by a state licensed warehouse. Currently, the rates are set at 0.001042 cents per day, which equals 38 cents a year. In and out charges, handling charges in can be up to 7 cents, and the out charge can be, redelivery charge can be up to 7 cents, but the total of the two are not to exceed 12 cents. These rates have not been revisited since 1998. They opened a docket in 97 and concluded in 98. So it's been a long time, and over the course of that period, the cost of steel and concrete, utilities, insurance, labor, the cost of storing grain have risen to the point where the current rates that they are set, the ceilings, are not adequate to recover the costs. As a result of that, a practice in the grain industry has been to encourage that grain, that producers who wish to retain the right to price their grain at a later date or defer the income to a later date, as they would if they deposited under a warehouse receipt, they're being encouraged to go with a voluntary credit sale contract, price later contract, or a deferred payment contract, in which case the elevators generally charge a fee to put grain on that, which is more more in line with what the actual costs are for storing it. The downside for the producer is that they lose title of the grain when they put it on one of those contracts, and they give up their bond coverage because it's essentially an unsecured loan to the grain buyer when they do that. Now, I'm not saying that by passing this bill that practice will end, because there are certainly other advantages to it for the grain buyer, but it will certainly make it viable for a grain elevator to store the grain and to be able to make a fair profit while he's doing it, so it'll be a more viable option for the warehouse. So we were asked to open a docket and examine it, and in the course of my research, I found that South Dakota is one of the few states that is still regulating storage rates for grain elevators. South Dakota is, Nebraska is, and Kansas is. Kansas is in the process of deregulating as well. This bill would allow grain elevators or grain warehouses at the time of licensure to report their rate. They would still have to file it with the commission. Would give them more flexibility in that they could charge different rates for different commodities rather than to have a one-size-fits-all. You know, so the cost of storing soybeans obviously is more expensive than storing corn. You know, if you have to put it on the ground, it's just a lot more delicate. It would allow them to waive the in and out fees if they took title to the grain, which many of them do anyway. So the reason we're bringing this bill is that the current statute requires us to fix a rate, to actually fix it, so we weren't able to deregulate it through our administrative process. So that's why we're bringing this bill, and we think it's good for the industry and will be good for the producer as well.
Thank you, Mr. Meloff. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Zander, Executive Director and Lobbyist for the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association. We'd just like to offer our support for Senate Bill 54 for the reasons stated by Jim Helf, the PUC. And as Jim said, there's very little grain stored this way anymore, and maybe with this bill that would be another option for farmers, that there'd be some storage options for them. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Zander. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, we will open to opponents. Are there any opponents? Seeing none, we will close the questions from the committee.
Close.
We will close two questions from the committee.
Okay.
Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just
In it, it says on line 13, it says no more than four times. I wonder why the magic number, or is there a reason for it?
Mr. Chairman? The reason that we put the limit on the, and thank you for asking that question. I was actually going to mention that in my introduction and forgot. But the reason that we put a limit on the amount of time that they could change it was at certain times during harvest, elevators will offer better deals on their price later contracts, like they'll offer a reduced fee. And we just thought that if we limited the number of times, it would prevent the elevators from manipulating the storage charges to influence that behavior, rather than giving a break on the contract side. Some may be tempted just to raise the storage rates up. The reason that we put it four times, we figured once a quarter would be adequate, and if they needed to do it more than that we didn't think that would be a problem.
Senator Howey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, especially in view of the fact that we're one of the few states that still regulates, why didn't the department just bring a bill to deregulate it instead of just revising the regulation?
Mr. Chairman? We felt that it was important that they file it with us kind of as a tariff charge to ensure that so that producers could be confident that when they delivered their grain that they were getting the same deal as maybe their neighbor who's on the co-op board and so forth, or relatives of the warehouse manager, that if they had a tariff rate that they could set themselves, that they could call the PUC, determine and have the confidence to know that they were being treated just as all the other patrons were.
Senator Valley.
A couple questions, Mr. Chair. First question is, if I bring my grain in the fall, or let's say I bring my wheat in during the summer, and I put it on storage, and I'm assuming that this will be posted, what the rates are, we'll say it's 4 cents a month or whatever it is, and then corn harvest happens, and the elevator manager says, I think we ought to get about 6 cents now. Is that going to be retroactively affecting my wheat? And then, about Christmas, things are getting a little tight. Price of wheat's gone up, and it looks like it's going to keep going up, so maybe I'll just raise storage up to 7 cents. I got another one to go here in March. I can keep raising. Is that retroactive? And how much time period does a person have to move that grain?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I've talked to some attorneys on our staff. The bill does not directly speak to that, and we all agree that the terms that are set out on the warehouse receipt itself. So if the term is storage at, 6 cents a month, if that's what it is, that would be in place until the warehouse receipt was surrendered. So that protection is in place for the consumer. They wouldn't be able to retroactively raise the rate unless language on the receipt itself allowed for that.
Senator Valley.
Would that be part of the posting of the regulations with you? I can see that being a real problem for the storage person. So that the only way that he would know that is if he read the storage receipt and realized that it could change at any time. If they had that just clause in there that says rates may change at any particular time, that'd be correct.
Mr. Chairman, you mean for the depositor? Certainly, it would be each depositor's responsibility, I think, to read the document prior to signing it. It's not a practice at this time. Generally, the rates are put in, but I would imagine that those things would probably fall under a different code of law other than ours. General contract law would probably apply.
Sir Valley.
My second question was something that you said kind of offhand. You said that it costs more to store beans than it does corn, especially on the ground. You can't warehouse. Can you warehouse receipt for grain storage on the ground?
Mr. Chairman, we currently have in our administrative rules, we have two classes of storage, of emergency storage. One is seasonal, which is between July 1 and January 31st. If during the harvest season they get overfull and they need to put grain on the ground, they are allowed to do that without any additional permission from the commission. We have them report it in their monthly grain reports. They have to account for it separately on their DPR. So if our inspector goes and sees a pile of grain on the ground, they know what's stored grain, what's company stored grain, what percentage of that may be receipted. After January 31st, starting February 1st, we have what's called non-seasonal emergency storage. Obviously, by that time, there's a danger for more damage. And during that period, we require 100% bonding for any customer-owned grain that's in emergency storage. And again, it has to be accounted for on the DPR. So there's an incentive for the warehousemen to get that grain off the ground as soon as possible.
Further questions, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read this bill and I look at lines 14, 15, it said the warehouse shall charge each customer the rates on file with the commission. Often, grain elevators will discount storage in the spring of the year. I know it's a common practice of the elevators that I do business with. They're full in the fall, and when they get a lot of space, they'll get competitive to try to get grain in, and they'll sometimes offer free or reduced price storage if you'll bring grain in the spring of the year, and then you can price it whenever you want. Within the next 4 or 5 months. Would this prohibit them from doing that because it says they have to charge the rate that's filed with the commission?
Senator Roden, it's my understanding that what you're describing is what I talked about with the voluntary credit sale contracts as we discuss price later. A lot of times they'll discount the rates that they charge, the fee that they charge to carry that grain on a price later contract, in order to encourage them to bring it in. Certainly, if a warehouse wanted to lower their storage rates, I mean, they would be able to do that up to four times. So if they wanted to lower storage rate in the spring, it's not a cumbersome process. It's a simple sheet with just a few lines on it that they have to send or fax or scan it and email it to us, and we can have it online and consider it filed almost immediately. So they would be able to lower their rates if they chose to.
Senator Peterson.
If I'm understanding you correctly, then if they're writing DP contracts with no storage, that would be lawful under this provision.
That is correct, Senator.
Further questions, Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Mike or Mr. Ralph, I want to commend you for your efforts on the Verisun issue. I've had very good reports on your efforts there. And my version's on the PUC. I guess my question is, it says it may change four times on line 13 in a year. Is that new language? What's the rates they change now exactly again? How many times can they change in a 1 year? Is it a 1 year period? How many times can they change the rates currently?
Senator, Mr. Chairman. Yes, they can currently change it now, and it's up to four times a year, but not more than twice in a single quarter, I believe, is the language in the order at this time.
So, Mr. Chairman, so if that's the case, then why do you have new language saying that again?
Mr. Chairman, this statute would basically supersede the current order. Rates are currently governed by order of the commission, and this would remove that from the commission and deregulate it.
It would. Okay. Follow-up question. Okay, the PUC's traditional role has been to help the consumer, you know, and help the company somewhat, but always looking at, so will this bill benefit the farmer, or will it benefit the elevator at the expense of the farmer?
Mr. Chairman?
In your opinion, of course.
In our opinion, we view this as a win-win, because what's occurring now is oftentimes warehouses are not offering storage at times and encouraging the price later, which results in loss of title to the grain, so that the bailment situation no longer exists and there's no bond coverage in place after the grain has been passed over, after title is passed. So in that sense, we view this as a benefit for the producer, because if the... And the producers are generally paying a fee on that, which is more than what's currently allowed for storage. I think by allowing the warehouses to set their storage at the rate where they can recover their costs, we're hoping that there's no guarantee, but it will certainly be a viable option for storage to be offered more to producers than it is right now. So we view it as a win-win.
Mr. Chairman, with the chairman's diligence, I would like to do a little scenario and then how that would affect, just real, like 5 cents.
Yeah.
Had a constituent, went into an elevator, dropped some grain, was told it would be 3 cents a month, but they didn't sign the papers that day. Come back the end of the year, or 2 months later, they sent out the papers, it was 5 cents, but he was orally told 3 cents. How would this legislation affect that? No effect. Would it actually affect something, or how would this legislation affect that scenario?
Mr. Chairman? Well, if that happened, if it was at a state-licensed warehouse, that producer could call us and we could investigate if that incident actually happened, because there are currently storage ceilings in place, and they're not 5 cents. So...
Okay. Or, you know.
Yeah. Right. So currently, if he had an oral agreement and he told him 4 cents, for example, just hypothetically, and when he came back later and told him it was going to be 6 cents, he could call the commission and we could see what was on file at the time that he stored his grain, and we could enforce that ceiling.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Center Valley.
Real quick, just out of curiosity, how many state warehouses do we have and how many federal warehouses do we have in the state? Do you have that number per chance or about?
Mr. Chairman, I do. This is a rough estimate, but there's roughly 95 state-licensed warehouses and roughly 120 federally licensed warehouses. Over the years, there's kind of been a very slow migration over the federal side as some of the larger multi-state warehouses buy up some of the smaller co-ops that may have been state licensed and bring them under.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Meloff. We will open the committee to comments and or action. Senator Peterson. Senator Peterson moves do pass. Senate Bill 54. Is there a second? Second by Senator Hansen. Comments on that motion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After all, in the end, most of the grain buying facilities that we're talking about are owned by the farmers. They're their own facilities. And whatever we can do to improve that facility, and I feel is a benefit to the farmer. And as they mentioned, it probably would encourage more storage and less delayed pricing. I think a lot of farmers probably don't realize when they enter a DP contract that the bond doesn't cover them, and they would be covered under bond when it was in storage, so it's probably a good move.
Further comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass Senate Bill 54. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bradford.
Aye.
Garnas.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Klocek.
No.
Maher.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Howie.
Aye.
Broden.
Aye.
Senate Bill 54, 8 ayes, 1 nay.
Senate Bill 54 goes to the pass. It goes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Senator Peterson, would you present this bill on the floor? Senator Valley, would you like to present that to the Republican caucus? Okay, with that, we will take up Senate Bill 55, an act to revise requirements regarding the licensing and regulation of grain buyers. Senate Bill 55 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Jim Melhoff from the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, Warehouse Division. Senate Bill 55 is an act to revise requirements regarding the licensing of grain buyers. Section 1 of this bill clarifies that the isolated purchase of grain for resale by producers who do not hold themselves out as being in the business of reselling grain are not in violation of the chapter, and it defines who a producer is. Last year, as part of our legislation regarding the grain buyers bills, we had eliminated the occasional sales exception in statute, and when we got over to the House side, they had some concerns about it, and they directed us to go back to the drawing board, more or less, and come up with a little bit better language on it. The reason the occasional sale language was put in the first place when the bills were originally drafted was so that if a producer had a crop loss or for any other reason was unable to meet his delivery contracts that he had entered into, that he would be able to go out and purchase enough grain so that he could fulfill his contracts without being in violation of any state statutes. We think that's a good thing to have it in there. The problem was in our office a year or so ago, I suppose it's been a couple years now, we had a situation where a grain buyer had hired somebody away from a licensed grain buyer. This was an unlicensed grain buyer, and
I got a mallet that might help.
Anyway, that grain buyer, so he'd hired this person away from one of our licensed grain buyers and started selling millet into what this other licensed grain buyer, it was kind of a niche market. It's kind of a little niche he carved out for himself. And this other individual hired that employee away and started selling grain into that market and basically taking business away from him. So through the course of our enforcement action, initially that person said that, well, he wasn't selling grain, he was selling seed. So we went through the process of debunking that defense, you know, being that he wasn't meeting any of the labeling or testing requirements to be able to call it seed. And then they went through the object, the defense, well, these are just occasional sales. We've only done it a number of times, which is really, from a legal standpoint, is a messy term to deal with. So what we've done this year is we struck the word occasional and has left isolated in, and we changed person to producer so that if somebody is not a grain producer, they are not allowed to buy grain for the purpose of resale. Currently, there's a regional grain contracting scam. I don't know if any of you have heard about it, but we did issue a warning about it where an individual went around and entered into a bunch of contracts to deliver grain, seemingly with no intention of ever doing it, under a number of names that he had invented. He had a address that turned out to be a post office box in Omaha at a UPS store. The contracts had the name of the company, which didn't really exist, and then just an illegible squiggle on the line. Well, when the market went his way, he tried to cash in on those contracts. He called the grain buyers and said he wouldn't be able to deliver the grain and just wanted to close the contracts and take his money. When word got out what was going on, a lot of the grain buyers, the licensed grain buyers throughout the area, resisted that. They didn't send the check. So this guy has since started buying grain from other places and delivering it and collecting his money. History has shown that when this was done last year in Kansas, the market went the other way. Of course, that guy just disappeared, and the grain buyers were left holding it. This again tightens it up, so certainly a scam such as that would not be able to be done on an intrastate basis. You can't buy grain and sell it to somebody else unless you're actually a producer. And we just think it's a much better law to be tightened up like that. Section 2 of the bill adjusts the table used to determine the bonding requirement for grain buyers, and it takes the cap off of that bond amount. As I discussed before, we went through this last year where we changed from a location-based bonding formula and attached it to the amount of grain that was purchased. You know, since that time, we've experienced a great deal of volatility in the markets. When we initially introduced this bill, there were three grain buyers in the state of South Dakota who hit that $100 million cap. You know, now there's more, and some of them have exceeded it by a great deal. The VeriSun bankruptcy has also kind of brought the commodity price and the bonding scale that we had in place into greater clarity. We just thought that it would be better to take the cap off it so that that ratio remains consistent all the way up. Section 3 of this bill repeals our arrest authority that inspectors currently have. It was our intention to repeal this last year. We repealed it in the warehouse section of statute, but we failed to do it in this section. So this is just kind of a cleanup action on our part. Our inspectors are not trained law enforcement officers. There's not any danger to society. Obviously, a rogue grain buyer can create a lot of economic havoc, but we don't think anybody would be in immediate danger, so we just think it's better that this law be repealed. And with that,
thank you.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, my name is Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls and a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Corn Growers. We're fully in support of Senate Bill 55. To Senator Peterson's question earlier that came up on a prior bill, this primarily because this increases the bonding requirements and starts to reflect some of the amount of grain that's being purchased by the respective entities. And so we think this is a step in the right direction. With that, Mr. Chairman, we'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Good morning again. Kathy Zander, Executive Director and Lobbyist for the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association. And I work for an 8-member board that are actively involved in the grain handling business. And if you had a space as commentator, that's where I would be this morning. Our board has voted to be neutral on the legislation, so I'm just here to let you know that we don't oppose it. We've taken that position because we recognize with the unprecedented increase in grain prices that PUC does see that they need to increase the bonds. But then on the other hand, it's hard for me to come up here and say that we advocate something that's going to increase, you know, expenses for our members. So with that, I'll close, and if you have any questions, I can answer those later. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good Morning. Brenda Foreman, South Dakota Association of Cooperatives. And we've talked with a little bit of my board. Again, while increases are nothing we like to see, we do understand the responsibilities that PUC has to both our elevators, but also to the members of those elevators as cooperative owners. So we are not in opposition to this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing none, we will close opponent testimony and take opponents. Are there any opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Klocek.
Question for Brenda Foreman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your statements, you said you spoke a little bit to the board. The board does express their approval for this legislation?
Expressed no opposition to it, yes.
But not support for it?
I would say the legislation is fine because we understand what it is. But as Kathy said, it's kind of hard to say we agree with increasing fees. But with the situations and when we looked at the members of my board that are involved in this process, they do not see a problem with it. It is something they can handle, and it's something they think is appropriate to a point. But they have no opposition to it, so they see it going forward as a positive to both producers, mainly because of what it means in terms of that, but also it's something that they are willing to do because it's the right thing.
One follow-up question.
Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Foreman, then that cost would be passed. Would that cost not be passed on to the farmers anyway? Most of the time they would charge.
Typically, typically it depends upon how the business decides to assess it within the overall cost of the business. I can't guarantee it is, and I can't guarantee it isn't, because that will be determined in my case with cooperatives by the Board of Directors.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Further questions, Senator Valley?
Question for Mr. Melhoff. This isn't a question on one of the changes, but just for my edification here, the line two on page, the first page there, when it's defining grain, it said except for grain that's used for planting, for reproduction, or for grain that goes to feed livestock. Why do we not include those in the definition of grain?
Mr. Chairman, last year when we brought our bill forward, it was originally in there that feeders, cattle feeders, grain that was purchased to feed livestock would have been brought under this statute. Through our conversations with industry, both this industry, that industry, producer groups, obviously the feeders did not want to be included and were pledging to fight very hard not to be included. But the deciding factor was that there was not a lot of support from the producer groups, the Farm Bureau, Farmers Union. When we looked to them to support us on leaving them in, we just didn't find a lot of support for that, and we just felt that the bill, as it was written, was too valuable to let it die over that. So we didn't fall on our sword for that. So that's why that's in there.
Sir Belli?
So if I'm a producer and I sell to a large cattle feedlot, there's no bonding requirement there. I have no protection then with that I would have at the elevator. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Yeah, and one of the other reasons was that they felt that the line between producer and grain buyer was a little blurred, because there's obviously a lot of producer-owned feeding operations that sometimes buy additional grain besides what they produce themselves.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we will close, open the committee to comments and or action. Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move due pass.
Motion by Senator Hansen, due pass. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Howey. Comments on that motion? Senator Hansen.
Well, I remember the, you know, the activity on our Senate Ag Committee last year when we addressed this issue, and I thought it was a pretty good idea then. We've even fine-tuned it a little bit, and kind of in response to the fact that the bonding requirements are being increased. Sure, that's an added expense in the cost of doing business on the part of that entity that's purchasing the grain, but you know, in the from the standpoint of protecting the interests of that individual seller, it's a tremendous hardship if the buyer is unable to perform, and so it's just kind of like buying an insurance policy or having somebody you're doing business with buying an insurance policy. And it's so important that those bonding requirements be up there at a level where they actually mean something. And even at these levels, with the with what we saw the grain market rise to last year, you can get to the point of where there may not be enough money to protect everybody to the degree that they want to be protected. But I think that this does make it a little bit more realistic. So it's a bill that really does make good sense and needs to be passed.
Further comments? Any other comments on the due pass motion? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass, Senate Bill 55. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bradford.
Aye.
Garnas.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Klocek.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Howey.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, 9 ayes, 0 nays.
Senate Bill 55 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Valley, would you present that on the floor?
Yes, sir.
Senator Klocek, would you want to present that to your caucus? Thank you. We will move now to Senate Bill 56, an act to change certain references regarding the grain dealer to a grain buyer. Senate Bill 56 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Jim Melhoff with the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, Warehouse Division. This is kind of another little trailer from last year's legislative package. Each of these bills, there's five sections, and each section refers to a different grain council or commission that allows them to enter into contracts with the Public Utilities Commission to perform checkoff audits in the course of our regular inspections. The language in those bills still had the old grain dealer language, and this bill will simply change that to grain buyer and make the term consistent throughout statute. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Are there other proponents? Other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Any opponents? Seeing none, we will open to questions. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, comments and or action? Senator Howey. Motion by Senator Howey. Due pass. Is there a second? Second by Senator Valley. Comments on that motion? Seeing.
Yeah, I have some prepared.
Senator Howey, by all means. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass, Senate Bill 56. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
I suppose I should vote against this.
Bradford.
Aye.
Garnas.
Okay.
Hansen.
Aye.
Klocek.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Howie?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, 8 ayes, 1 excused.
Thank you. Motion consent by Senator Peterson, second. Second by Senator Howie. Comments on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senate Bill 56 goes to the floor. Do pass on consent. Thank you very much, Mr. Melhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of today's calendar. Are there any announcements? Don't forget we have a page party, I think, at 11:30 in the lobby of the Senate. Anything else? Motion by Senator Hansen to adjourn, second by Senator Valley. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.